Fred Durst?
He's like Iggy.
Oh, you are sorely mistaken. I
play something from $3 Bill, y'all.
What is that?
That's the landmark Limp Bizkit album.
Limp Bizkit? Oh my God! I mean, they
wait. You don't agree that those are the most crucial grooves you've heard since Funkadelic?
What, Limp Bizkit grooves? Yeah, absolutely.
It's like
the
ultimate cross between Funkadelic and Rob Tyner.
Yeah, no, I don't agree at all.
Oh, you do not deserve a radio show.
CITR 101.9 FM, your crucial groove station.
It's just a lot of BS.
CITR.
Yeah.
Why do I keep on thinking? Okay.
If you, it's like sitar. You read it, but CITR.
This is what my producer has to go through every week when I do my promos. It takes like 3 hours to do a 30-second promo. CITR.
Okay. Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah.
This is Wiretaps Jonathan Goldstein, and you are listening to CITR 101.9. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Okay, good morning. Night? I don't know. It's 3 a.m. It's kind of like we're straddling the time between morning and night right now. But either way, if it's morning or night, good, you know, morning or night to you. This is Alex Lenz from CITR, and you're listening to UBC Happy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. So normally UBC Happy Hour, we air Fridays from 5 to 6 p.m., but as part of 24 Hours of Student Power, which is happening right now for the next day, we are, airing our show at this time. So, tune in for the next 24 hours and you're going to hear awesome student programming. So, this event is all about highlighting students and student programming here at UBC. So yeah, we're honored to be part of this day because, of course, we do a lot of student coverage and our show is made entirely by students and for students. So yeah, awesome. We're really excited to be part of 24 Hours of Student Power, and there's so much cool content being produced as part of this initiative. So yeah, on today's show, we are going to be looking at some student developments from the past year. So the first kind of thing we're going to hear is the Vagina Monologues, which is happening this weekend at the Frederick Wood Theater here at UBC. So the Vagina Monologues is a historical play. It's been around for a while, but it's done every year at UBC, and some lovely gals who are part of the play put together this segment for the Gender Empowerment Collective, which produces the show Intersections here at UBC, at CITR, sorry. So, you might have already heard this piece, but it's really cool. They're going to do some readings of the Vagina Monologues and then also kind of assess the relevance or maybe kind of decreasing relevance of the Vagina Monologues and how it's kind of, it's placed in our current society. So we're going to hear that first, and then we're going to hear some student-made music, and we're also going to hear an interview that we did a while back with some engineering students who are working on an app for brewing beer. So yeah, just highlighting some really awesome student achievements over the years. So yeah, up first, Hannah from the Gender Empowerment Collective put together this piece on the Vagina Monologue. So let's take a listen.
My vagina's angry. It is. It's pissed off. My vagina's furious and it needs to talk. It needs to talk about all this shit. It needs to talk to you. I mean, What's the deal? An army of people out there thinking up ways to torture my poor ass, gentle, loving vagina, spending their days constructing psycho products and nasty ideas to undermine my pussy. Vagina motherfuckers. All this shit they're constantly trying to shove up us, clean us up, stuff us up, make it go away? Well, my vagina's not going away. It's pissed off and it's staying right here. Like tampons. What the hell is that? A wad of dry fucking cotton stuffed up there. Why can't they find a way to subtly lubricate the tampon? As soon as my vagina sees it, it goes into shock. It says forget it. It closes up. You need to work with the vagina, introduce it to things, prepare the way. That's what foreplay's all about. You've got to convince my vagina, seduce my vagina, engage my vagina's trust. You can't do that with a dry wad of fucking cotton.
Hello, we are five members of the cast and crew of UBC's production of the Vagina Monologues 2018. My name is Hannah Toms. I'm a cast member performing in Introduction, Lists, and They Beat the Girl Out of My Boy.
I am Mickey, and I am performing the Vagina Workshop in the Vagina Monologues.
I'm Zainab, and my monologue is Reclaiming C-U-N-T.
I'm Nicole, and I'm the stage manager.
I'm Michaela Gerwing, and I'm the director. So for those of you that don't know, the Vagina Monologues is a play written by Eve Ensler in the 90s, and it's performed globally every year around Valentine's Day to raise awareness and to help end violence against women. So we're going to give you a sneak peek of our show that's happening on February 17th and 18th in the Frederick Wood Theater at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6. Tickets are available online or at the door. We're going to give you a little taste of our show with Mickey performing part of our piece, Vagina Workshop.
In the first session, the woman who runs the Vagina Workshop asked us to draw a picture of our own unique, beautiful, fabulous vagina. That's what she called it. She wanted to know what our own unique, beautiful, fabulous vagina looked like to us. One woman who was pregnant drew a big red mouth, screaming with coins spilling out. Another very skinny woman drew a big serving plate with a kind of Devonshire pattern on it. I drew a huge black dot with little squiggly lines around it. The black dot was equal to a black hole in space, and the squiggly lines were meant to be people or things or just your basic atoms that got lost there. I had always thought of my vagina as an anatomical vacuum, randomly sucking up particles and objects from the surrounding environment. I did not think of my vagina in practical or biological terms. I did not, for example, see it as something attached to me. In the workshop, we were asked to look at our vaginas with hand mirrors. Then, after careful examination, we were to verbally report to the group what we saw. I must tell you that, up until this point, everything I knew about my vagina was based on hearsay or invention. I had never really seen the thing. It had never occurred to me to look at it. My vagina existed for me on some abstract plane. It seemed so reductive and awkward looking at it, like we were in the workshop on our shiny blue mats with our hand mirrors. It reminded me of how the early astronomers must have felt with their primitive telescopes. I found it quite unsettling at first, my vagina. Like the first time you see a fish cut open and you discover this other bloody complex world inside right under the skin. It was so raw, so red, so fresh. And the thing that surprised me most was all the layers. Layers inside layers, opening into more layers. My vagina amazed me. I couldn't speak when it came my turn in the workshop. I was speechless. I had awakened to what the woman who ran the workshop called vaginal wonder. I just wanted to lay there on my mat, legs spread, examining my vagina forever.
So now we're going to move on to a discussion between the five of us, and the theme around which our discussion is going to revolve is a very large concept in third wave feminism, which is intersectionality. And Zainab is going to read us a definition of the word intersectionality.
So this definition is from YW Boston. Intersectionality was coined by law professor and social theorist Kimberlé Crenshaw. And basically, intersectional theory asserts that people are often disadvantaged by multiple sources of oppression, such as race, class, gender identity, sexual orientation, religion, and others. And intersectionality recognizes that these identity markers do not exist independently of each other, and that each informs the others, often creating a complex convergence of oppression.
So, The Vagina Monologues was written by Eve Ensler during the 1960s, the 1970s?
The
90s. The 90s. Okay, I thought it was much earlier than that. But in the 90s, that still would have been part of second wave feminism. And something that second wave feminism, as much as it was an incredible and important movement, something that's being criticized about it today, now that we're in third wave feminism, is that it was very much a white and cis movement. And relating to the definition that Zainab just read, third wave feminism is intersectional feminism, and it draws on not just the perspective of privileged women. And something we're going to talk about is that the Vagina Monologues itself has been heavily criticized for being quite exclusive toward especially the trans community.
Vagina Monologues in itself is criticized because we use the word vagina. What we now recognize as part of third wave feminism, that vagina isn't synonymous with being a woman. You don't have to have a vagina to be a woman. And I think that's a big part of why the Vagina Monologues has been criticized so much. But even so, it is still an important piece to keep doing on a year-by-year basis.
What's great about the Vagina Monologues is that Eve Ensler brings new works to the play. So hopefully, I'm hoping that the Vagina Monologues will start to evolve over the years and to include those different identities and also include more discussion in regards to the openness in defining what a woman can be.
While there are some pieces with issues in the show, there are also a lot of pieces that remain very relevant to today. So while we are in a different wave of feminism and have different definitions of what a woman is and what a feminist is, a lot of things and a lot of issues that we're still dealing with are the same. Sexual violence is still a major issue in our society. The show draws a light on that, and I think it's very important that the show continues to happen, that we continue to have these discussions, like this discussion we're having here about intersectionality and the problems with the show, so that we can take the good parts and leave what's maybe problematic.
And that's a beautiful thing about theater. We're offering a discussion. We're opening the stage up to you and asking you to leave and reflect on what you've seen. Not only are we asking you to reflect, but to bring people who you believe need that reflection and need to open up to this new wave of feminism. We'll be hosting, Mikhail will be hosting talkbacks after each of our shows on the 17th and 18th to further discuss and answer any questions you have about anything you see on our stage.
As a woman of color, I recognize the importance of promoting inclusivity and a more intersectional feminism so that we can include all women. And I'm hoping that during the talkback discussion portion at the end of the play, we'll have some good discussion around any issues with the play and promoting a more inclusive, intersectional form of feminism.
What's really cool about our production is that we have a Women's March theme going on. So where the play itself may be lacking intersectional recognition, we're incorporating a lot of posters in our Women's March segments that address intersectionality, which is really cool.
Yeah, and we also gave the opportunity to all the cast to discuss a lot of different elements in this. We have a director. She's been amazing at acknowledging that we're a diverse group who needs to all equally have our voice heard. We're incorporating many chants within the transitions that are acknowledging all the things we've been speaking about in this interview.
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time actually talking about those chants. They weren't just kind of picked. A lot of thought was put into them about the different perspectives of the different people who are going to be hearing these chants and different ways that they might be interpreted by people, and making sure that they're inclusive and inoffensive to anyone who might hear them. For example, one of the chants that we came up with for one of the transitions and that's been really popular at women's marches is "Pussy Grabs Back," kind of in response to Donald Trump's "Grab Her by the Pussy." But then we ended up actually taking it out of the transitions because "Pussy Grabs Back" kind of implies a violent gesture, like grabbing sounds violent and almost has kind of a sexual violent connotation.
Yeah, almost like you're going to degrade us or we're going to degrade you right back. And mm-hmm. that's not what we're doing here. We're not trying to objectify the opposite sex because they're objectifying us.
I mean, what we're trying to do is, you know, recognize that we can all have equality. To give some more rights is not going to take anything away from another person.
I think it's something that's very misinterpreted about feminism, and something that drives a lot of men off feminism is that it's perceived as trying to like reverse the balance of power that we have in this patriarchal society that we live in to make women superior in society's eyes to men, which is not and really not what feminism is about. Feminism is about promoting equality across all gender identities.
I think another important thing to mention is equality versus equity, and something intersectionality is fighting for is equity, because equality is when you're just evening the playing field, like giving women more opportunities, but equity is when we're recognizing every intersection and we're recognizing that people of color have less opportunities and that indigenous people and indigenous women in particular in this country are really struggling and are facing much more barriers than I am as a cis white woman. And I think that striving to create equity is what we're really doing here with this piece.
In our rehearsals, we have quite a lot of workshops, and it kind of makes me sad almost that audience members who come and see our show only see the show. They don't see everything, all the activities that go on behind the scenes, like during our rehearsals and all the discussions that I've learned so much. Like, my horizons have been so opened by these workshops. But one that we did, I think it was during the first ever rehearsal, we did what's called a privilege walk. Do you maybe want to explain this one, Michaela?
Yeah, I'll explain this one. So when I'm planning rehearsals, I try and do a mix of workshops that have to do with feminism and equity and intersectionality, and also acting workshops. So in our very first rehearsal, we did a privilege walk. I had all the women line up in the room, and then I asked a series of questions and had people take a step forward or take a step back if they had experienced that. So some of the questions would be, have you ever skipped a meal because you couldn't afford one? Did you ever feel like you struggled to go to school because you couldn't afford it? All these different things, not necessarily just money, but just a range of questions that took into account different intersections of identity. And then at the end of the walk, the women took a look around the room and saw where they were in relation to everyone else. And I think that was a really powerful experience for a lot of the people, because I think it's easy to forget our privilege in life. And I think it's easy to forget how privileged we are, and that other people around us, we don't even know, but people have all different struggles. And I think it's important to really recognize our own privilege.
What was really incredible that Alex, our president, who unfortunately isn't here to chat about, noticed by watching everyone do so. And it was really sad to notice the one thing we did all have in common was, even today, we all felt like at one point in our life, we had been discriminated against because we're a woman, because of our identity. We have built this amazing community, and that's exactly what we're trying to work against.
I have learned so much in this experience. We have so many different individuals in our cast with different races, sexuality, and gender expressions, and different religions, and people from all different walks of life. And throughout this experience, we have all learned so much about intersectionality. And this production is so special because we're able to kind of share what we have learned with the audience and get everybody talking about what can still be done, and get people to maybe think a bit more about how intersectionality affects them and the people around them, because it is so important.
This year's production does incorporate things that haven't been incorporated before at UBC V-Day. So even if you've seen the vagina monologues in a past year, what we're doing here this year is different, and there is new things and there's new conversations to be had. So even if you've seen this production before, don't let that discourage you from coming, because there's still so much that you can take away from this show.
And if you haven't seen it too, I'm not just saying this because I'm in the play and I'm promoting. Well, that's that's why we're here, but that's not the only reason I want people to come, because being in the show, I've seen every monologue more times than I can count at this point, but every single time I see each one, I'm so moved and so inspired. Like, there's such a strong, inspiring, sometimes funny, sometimes sad, sometimes sexy message between every single monologue, and I really want people to experience that. There's so much that people who are already hardcore feminists can get out of this play. There's so many people who, you know, haven't been exposed to feminism before can get out of this play. There's so many people who are against feminism, who unfortunately exist, can get out of this play, and hopefully have their minds changed about gender equality. And on that note, I think we're going to wrap it up.
I just want to give a reminder, our show dates are February 17th and 18th in the Frederick Wood Theater. Our social media, Facebook and Instagram, you can find us at UBC V-Day. Tickets are available online and at the door. Doors open at 6 and the shows are at 7, February 17th and 18th in the Frederick Wood Theater. All proceeds are going to be donated to SASC, the Sexual Assault Support Center on campus, and the Battered Women's Shelter in Vancouver.
This is how I came to love my vagina. It's embarrassing because it's not politically correct. I mean, I know it should have happened in the bath with salt grains from the Dead Sea, Enya playing and me loving my woman self. I know the story. Vaginas are beautiful. Our self-hatred is only the internalized repression and hatred of the patriarchal culture. It isn't real. Pussies unite. I know all of it. Like, if we'd grown up in a culture where we were taught that fat thighs were beautiful, we'd all be pounding back milkshakes and Krispy Kremes, laying on our backs, spending our days thigh expanding. But we didn't grow up in that culture. I hated my thighs, and I hated my vagina even more. I thought it was incredibly ugly. I was one of those women who had looked at it, and from that moment on, I wished I hadn't. It made me sick. I pitied anyone who had to go down there. In order to survive, I started to pretend there was something else between my legs. I imagined comfy futons with light cotton comforters, little velvet satays, leopard rugs, pretty things, like a silk handkerchief or quilted pot holders or play settings. I grew so accustomed to this that I lost all memory of even having a vagina. Whenever I had sex with a man, I imagined him inside of a mink-lined muffler or a Chinese bowl. Then I met Ben. Ben was the most ordinary man I had ever met. He was thin and tall and nondescript and wore khaki tan clothes. He didn't like spicy foods or listen to Prince. He had no interest in sexy lingerie. In the summer, he spent his time in the shade. He didn't share his inner feelings. He didn't have any problems or issues. And he wasn't even an alcoholic. He wasn't very funny or articulate or mysterious. He wasn't mean or unavailable. He wasn't self-absorbed or charismatic. He didn't drive fast. I mean, I didn't particularly like Ben. I mean, I would have missed him altogether if he hadn't picked up the change that I dropped on the deli floor. But when he handed me back my quarters and pennies, and his hand accidentally touched mine, something happened.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hi, this is Jeff from Wilco, and you're listening to CITR Vancouver.
101.9 FM in British Columbia. Jeez.
Are you interested in Indian classical music? Sargam UBC develops a music community by organizing workshops, jam sessions, performances, and other fun activities like movie nights. We performed at various events from 2014 that comprised both Hindustani and Carnatic music. We began to host Ragini in March 2016, where we performed for 300 people, and the concert will be annual. Sargam is a club that is open to anyone who is interested in just listening or performing, and no experience is required. Sargam UBC is also interested in collaborating to make music with other clubs. Subscribe to our YouTube page and check us out on Facebook.
Okay, so you are back listening to UBC Happy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. And yeah, we're in kind of an irregular time slot. Normally we're Fridays from 5 to 6 p.m., but yeah, it's 24 hours of student power, so our show is happening now, and we're really excited to be on at this at 3:30 a.m. So you just heard Hannah from the Gender Empowerment Collective here at CITR, her piece on the Vagina Monologues, which she is acting in, and you can check it out this weekend at the Frederick Wood Theater here at UBC. So yeah, up next we're going to hear a track from Samson Song, who is part of the UBC Music Initiative. So they are a campus club that kind of unites people through music, and yeah, they have some original recordings. So this is Samson's track, Ambiance.
Thank you. Hey, my name is Michael, and I am part of the team from the UBC psychedelic community. We recognize the ability of psychedelic substances to facilitate altered states of consciousness that can be beneficial for therapy and personal growth. Our aim is to promote an unbiased, fact-based discussion of these substances centered around their application to areas such as psychiatry and neuroscience, among others. As a club, we host socials where people can come together to discuss their own experiences. As well, we host speakers on campus to discuss a variety of topics related to all things psychedelic. Find us on Facebook at UBC Psychedelic Community for more information.
Out on the Shelves Library is a free, accessible, safe space for LGBTQ2IA+ people and their allies to discover and share stories and resources centering their experiences. Visit outontheshelveslibrary.com or stop by room 2112 of the Nest at UBC to find out more.
Okay, so you just heard Ambiance by Samson Song from the UBC Music Initiative, which is a really awesome campus club here at UBC. And up next, we're going to be hearing from three students who were working or still are working on an app for brewers to help them brew their beer remotely and scientifically and precisely. So yeah, this interview aired about a month ago on UBC Happy Hour. But yeah, we're going to kind of hear it again as part of 24 Hours of Student Power. So yeah, here's my interview with them. Okay, so we are joined by some UBC students who are working on designing an app for brewing beer. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Josh, and I'm a third year chemical engineering student.
I'm Vittorio. I'm a second year chemical and biological engineering student.
And I'm Landon, and I'm also a second year chemical and biological engineering student.
Awesome. So what is this app that you guys are working on?
So basically, we are building a application to kind of monitor and control the brewing process a little bit. So basically, it takes temperature readings and specific gravity readings, and as well as we're trying to incorporate some other sensors like pH sensors and kind of developing a way to measure SRM without using other instrumentation. Using like a phone camera or a Raspberry Pi camera.
Cool. So I guess the kind of the purpose of the app is so that brewers can monitor their brew while it's happening remotely. Is that kind of the main?
Yeah. Thing? So you can. The nice thing is that because it's like it's Wi-Fi based, you can see the temperature of your brew wherever you want. So like for specific brews, you need to kind of be in a range of temperatures. So we can set it up. So if your temperature is too high, then you know that you need to cool down your brew. Like you can go in and turn on your glycol chiller if you have one, or move it to a colder area so it can kind of cool down, turn on the heat, for example, if the brew is too cold. If your brew gets too cold, then your yeast isn't at kind of full production. So you want to lay in kind of that optimum range for brewing temperatures. Temperature is pretty finicky when it comes to process control. So you want to be in that optimum temperature.
Why do you think this app would be useful? Is it kind of more to like perfect your brew, convenience, both?
Yeah, it's kind of to perfect your brew. Brewing is kind of a really cool niche because it's people who are a lot of people who are into beer. It's kind of got a neat science based around it. There's scientific terms that have kind of been adapted into brewers' terms, right? For example, like OG and FG are original gravity and final gravity.
I was like, original gangster. Yeah, very scientific.
So they're like they're specific gravity measurements, which are a scientific way of measuring density, and that's how we find out the amount of alcohol that's produced by the yeast during the fermentation process.
Nice. So do you think that this app would be useful for someone who's trying to kind of get into brewing, maybe like an expert, everyone?
Yeah, we kind of want it to be used by everyone. Because there's people who who've been brewing for years that don't have a way to control it, or people who are new to brewing, and we can add how-tos, recipes, and stuff into the app. That's really, really easy to incorporate into the app. So then it kind of becomes more of a database of recipes and different values when it comes to beginning values and ending values for gravities and such, because everything's available on the internet when it comes to a lot of those things, but there's not a lot of user-friendly phone apps or websites for brewers. So that's my findings.
Yeah, I mean, I've Googled it, you know, and it's just like, I don't know, a 40-step like WikiHow page, and I was like, I'm not gonna bother with this. So this sounds really interesting. Maybe, yeah, a little bit more approachable if you're trying to get into it. So you guys are brewing out of, I understand, kind of like a janitor's closet in the chem building. So what is that like? What's your kind of process like on this research?
Currently all of our supplies and like when the brew is going through the fermentation process, it's in the janitor's closet. And it's not, I guess it's hard to say it's a janitor's closet because we've really just developed it into our little brew room, our storage room. It's some place where we can store everything, keep it tidy. But when we actually do the cooking, the brewing, we bring it up to the food safe club room. And yeah, and then while we do the process, it takes about 6 or 8 hours during the brewing. And it depends on the brew, of course. Mm-hmm. And I guess for us, when we first started out, it was a lot longer than we expected. But then you kind of get used to it, and the time amount just decreases. And it's a lot of fun, honestly. Like, yeah, it was my first time brewing about a few months ago. And yeah, I'm kind of addicted to it now.
Oh my God, addicted to brewing. That's great. So was it most of your first time brewing before you started this? Or like, did anyone have kind of more experience?
I was the only one that had a little bit of brewing experience from just going with my uncle in his garage and brewing. So I felt like I had a lot to bring to the group, but now like they know everything and we just do it all together.
What's your uncle's name?
Oh, it's Marcelo.
Okay, shout out to Marcelo for all your expertise in this process. Yes. Okay, so what's been the best brew that you guys have done so far?
It's definitely been our our blonde ale.
Okay.
Our Belgian blonde, sorry. It's turned out really good because the first one wasn't too good. We did a centennial brew, a pale ale centennial brew, which means just we mixed grains and the malt extract together. And it tastes a little bit artificial, to be honest. I didn't really like it that much. We messed up in a lot of things. There was a lot of false information on the internet. We took a long time to like make this recipe, gather all the information and just put it all together. And so the second brew that we did was an all-grain Belgian blonde. And I think it turned out really well. We just messed up on a little bit on the OG, but we already fixed that on the new.
Nice. I like Belgian beers. 33 Acres is a really good Belgian French Blanche. I really like theirs. If you're looking for inspiration. So where do you get your ingredients from, like your hops? Are they local suppliers or?
We mostly go to like homebrew stores. I guess two of them. So the first one's probably Dan's Homebrew. It's on East Hastings. Really friendly guy. You just go in and he's always got time for you. Just ask what ingredients and he'll pour them all for you. And yeah, it's just a local place. And then another one's Barley's in New West. And yeah, just the environment's really friendly. Like everyone's super nice. If let's say you had a specific yeast or hops that you wanted, but they didn't quite have it in stock, they'll look up a chart and find the closest nearest thing for you.
Cool. So working out of this kind of like, you know, mini lab that you guys have, do you have any like funny stories or, I don't know, is it kind of like, you know, your kind of team of people working together in this small lab? Like, how does that work?
It gets a little squishy in the closet for one thing, a little squishy, especially since we keep getting more things and trying to figure out where to put them. But honestly, one of the funniest times I thought was when we were on our first brew. And I think one of us thought it was funny to wear a lab coat and safety goggles and the gloves and make it look like Breaking Bad or something. And then, you know, someone would walk in and everyone would just stare at them and they'd stare at us. And it'd be a long, like, 30-second stare down. And then they're like, can I just use the microwave to heat up my food? And you're like, yeah.
So you don't have to wear a lab coat when you're in your lab?
No, someone just thought it would be really funny.
Okay.
So you shouldn't wear a lab coat.
Yeah.
It gives, like, the illusion that there's something more maybe intense happening. Like,
yeah, it was just, like, a first-time joke. I mean, we're a little bit more serious now, I guess you could say, but...
Okay, cool.
We're aware of what we're doing now.
Nice. So how have you guys been promoting the app?
Well, we're kind of under a umbrella organization for administration called UBC Envision. So we have a social media rep, Caitlin Lee, who's done a really good job of kind of putting up photos on our Instagram and organizing our Facebook. She's done a fantastic job of that. Lou Bosshart from UBC Public Affairs was somebody that contacted me after we went to the HE conference, the American Institute of Chemical Engineering conference in Minneapolis in October. We went to kind of present our project and talk about it a little bit. So she heard about that we went to this conference and about our app after, and she contacted Globe and Mail, and that's how the article kind of came to be. And as soon as the article went out, we've kind of gathered some other interest from you guys, and we've been talking to a few different breweries and cideries as well.
Nice. So this conference in Minneapolis, were there kind of interested people at the conference, or like, did you meet like-minded people that were working on similar things?
Yeah, the conference was really cool. So American Institute of Chemical Engineering, or IGE, they have kind of a student-based competition for ChemiCar, which is something that we kind of actually evolved, that this project kind of evolved out of. We originally were building this app for a competition, but they canceled the app competition. So when we were like, oh, hey, we're doing this, but you guys canceled the competition, they're like, okay, well, why don't you come speak about the project a little bit? So we came and we spoke about the project, and about 150 students showed up. It was probably one of the more packed workshops that I saw during the student conference. So that was kind of really cool to see. There's some photos on our social media to get an idea of the people there, and they were asking questions. Aichi also has a brewing competition that they do. They don't want to let the Canadians participate because we just make great beer.
Yeah, obviously. What? Why wouldn't they let Canadians participate?
I think they're worried about us bringing beer over the border, and because we're not, and because one of us wasn't 21.
So old.
One of the other.
It's so old. Anyway, right? Another conversation, but
yeah. We don't water down the beer enough.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. How has the public reaction kind of been to the app? Like, are kind of breweries interested in this?
So we've been talking to a few different breweries. Some breweries have process control and sensor based, like bigger breweries. But some smaller breweries, the sensors are expensive, charged a lot for these sensors. And it's not really fair, because they don't like, we can go in and we can build these boards for pretty relatively low cost, but to hire somebody else and come in and do it is out of the price range of some of these breweries, because they're running on pretty low margins. For the bigger breweries, they kind of have process control set in place a little bit, but the not so much with the remote monitoring, which is one thing that that we're kind of bringing to the table. And there are some aspects that they're not monitoring remotely. So, for example, one brewery has to go around to a bunch of different tanks and measure the density of their beer every day, which is a big job when you're dealing with a lot of different tanks, and somebody has to go around and measure temperature out of each tank for a smaller brewery. It eats up time and it eats up resources. You have a one-time cost, and you can monitor it for the rest of the time that the brewery is running. There's a pretty short return of investment, I believe.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Was this idea kind of inspired by like the local kind of beer scene that's, you know, become really popular lately? Like, it sounds like, you know, your market is more locally based. Are you kind of trying to kind of go bigger, or is it kind of more of like a local audience?
I mean, we would like to go bigger. The idea actually came out of this app competition, and we originally were going to do a water treatment app. We're treating the water still, but we're kind of treating it in a different way.
Well, isn't that like, you know, the monks in Belgium, they brewed beer because you couldn't drink the water?
We actually have a professor who thinks that one of the reasons why society's evolved and like lived so long is because we ate fermented fruit that had like basically had produced ethanol, and basically the ethanol had killed all the bad bacteria in our stomachs, and that's one of the reasons why like we evolved as a species.
Evolution at its finest.
We actually, funny enough, we're actually looking into a kombucha a little bit as well, because it follows a similar fermentation process, same as cider and wine. Kombucha is something that we started to look into because we have a team member, Nee Nugent, who's really into kombucha, so she's kind of started looking into the kombucha side of things a little bit.
It's a lucrative market, so yeah, good on you. I mean, last off, what's your favorite spot to grab a beer on campus? Do you have a favorite spot? Your closet?
Personally, I would say my favorite, I do like the beer that we produce, but doesn't have quite the atmosphere, and we can't drink in our closet because that is not a private residence, and it's also unfood safe to sample on the floor.
To sample on the
brewing floor
in the lab.
So I'd say that my favorite spot to grab a beer on campus would probably be Kerner's. The only problem is that it's a little bit on the other side of campus from us, so sometimes we end up going to Mahoney's.
I've been grabbing beer at Mahoney's for a while now, and it's been pretty good.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, like, I'm going to differ from you guys a bit. I'm going to go with, like, the gallery up top.
It's a cheaper option.
Hey, it's a nice view.
They have a great view.
I get to look down on people.
Yeah. I got into a really bad habit of like studying and drinking at the gallery, and then it kind of became like I only ever wanted to study when I was drinking, and I was like, this needs to stop. This needs to stop. My parents listen to this, so shout out to mom and dad. Cool. So if people are interested in the app, do you guys have social media? Is that like Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah, the best place to follow us is probably on Facebook. You can kind of get everything from UBC Envision. There's four projects, different projects that UBC Envision kind of manages, and beer is one of them. We also have an algae biofuels project, a flow cell project, and our ChemiCar, which is kind of our flagship project, which we evolved out of. So check us out on Facebook or Instagram at UBC Envision. There's a lot of really good brewing photos and some funny photos of us doing.
And your lab coats. And your unnecessary lab coats.
Lab coats. It's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Well, and our website.
Oh, and our website, ubcenvision.com.
Is it like N-vision or in-vision?
E-N-vision.
E-N-vision. Okay. Cool. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Are you tired of looking for a treadmill in the bird coop? UBC Boxing Club teaches boxing classes from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday to Wednesday. We have members with skills ranging from total beginners to amateurs. We have instructors from Eastside Boxing, as well as seminars from gyms like Lions MMA downtown. Whether you're looking to learn how to box or you want to spice up your cardio, UBC Boxing Club is open to everyone. For more information, look us up on our Facebook page at UBC Boxing Club.
So that was my interview with three UBC students working on a beer brewing app. And yeah, you're listening to UBC Happy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory, and this episode is made as part of 24 Hours of Student Power. So yeah, up next, to kind of close off the show, we're going to hear two tracks from a local UBC band called Cut Losses. They're on Spotify, Apple iTunes. You can find them everywhere, SoundCloud. And yeah, their tracks are called Spending Time on My Own and I Don't Have a Clue, from their EP Lightning Dolphin. So thank you so much for joining us this evening, morning, night. It's almost 4 a.m. now, so maybe good morning to people. Yeah, you just heard two tracks from The Cut Losses, which are a local band, and the tracks were Spending Time on My Own and I Don't Have a Clue. And this is UBC Happy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. I'm Alex Lenz. I'm the coordinator for the UBC Affairs Collective, which makes this show. And so, yeah, thank you so much for joining us. This is part of 24 Hours of Student Power, where student programming kind of takes over CITR. So, yeah, lots more, like 24 hours more of student programming to come. So, yeah, stay tuned for all of that. And you can listen to our show Fridays from 5 to 6 p.m. usually, and you can find all episodes podcasted online at citr.ca. If there's anything that you would want to contribute to this show, or if you have any comments for us, you can email us at ubcaffairs@citr.ca. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you, or we'll hear you, next Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Thunderbird Eye for CITR 101.9 FM's annual 24 Hours of Student Power event highlighting incredible achievements and stories from UBC's student population. As always, before we get started, I'd like to acknowledge that this episode is being recorded and broadcasted on the unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Now, as I mentioned, 24 Hours of Student Power focuses on students at the University of British Columbia with great stories to tell, or students that are pretty accomplished. And my guest today fits nicely into both of those categories. We have UBC Thunderbirds goaltender Matt Hewitt.
And makes another stop, puck still loose. Out to Orban, another stop by Hewitt. Unbelievable save by Matt Hewitt. He just keeps making highlight reel stops.
Matt is having his best season as a Thunderbird, currently second in the league with a .922 save percentage and on his way to the playoffs. He is recently named WHL Graduate of the Month for January, and has been on fire in the new year. He's also well known as Ryan Miller's emergency replacement last season, who suited up for your Vancouver Canucks as the backup goaltender when AHL starter Thatcher Demko was unable to make it to Vancouver in time. So, Matt, congratulations on the excellent play of late. It's been a while since you lost a game. Does this season feel any different from your previous four?
I think, like you mentioned, this is probably my best season as a Thunderbird so far. I'm in my fifth year now, so I've played a handful of games here at UBC. I definitely can say, as a team, overall, I think this is the strongest we've been probably within the 5 years. I think just gelling well together, and especially after the break, has we've really come together as a team.
Yeah, so you're actually one of the busiest goaltenders in Canada West. You face the third most shots all year. You're tied for shots faced a game with 35. And you get into most games. You've got, I think, 19 on the season now. In a game around the end of October against Lethbridge, you stopped 53 shots in a 6-4 victory. What is it like to face 57 shots in a game?
It can be a lot of fun. I mean, that is if most of them are not going in the net.